Hey guys, welcome to another podcast of Volume 11. I'm João Vilela, and I'm here with the one and only Matheus Mancuso, the probably greatest phenomenon of the whole new modern guitarist, and we're going to talk to him about how he got... I'm not even exaggerating, okay? So we're going to talk about how that came to be. And Matteo, it's an honor having you. I'm going to do a very brief introduction. You're a great Italian guitar player that has called the attention for having really fluent, smooth, great playing and technique. And because of that, you're often referred to as some, like a phenom, a virtuoso, a prodigy, all those words. And I actually want to start the interview also thanking you for accepting this invitation. And... telling us if you like those adjectives, you like being called those things, because it might be cool to hear, especially in the beginning, wow, people are noticing me, but then I imagine it could get a little bit too much if you're always referred to that, to some a guitar player like that.
Well, I mean, it's good because I like when people appreciate what I'm doing, technically speaking, especially guitar players. So because guitar is a really difficult instrument to play, a lot of guitar players tend to be attracted to difficult things, you know? So that's when the virtuoso thing came out. But actually, when I started playing the guitar, I didn't want to play fast or, you know, play complicated things. I just wanted to play clean and in a very good way. I just wanted to play exactly what I heard in my head and exactly what I hear in my head. So that's why I worked on my technique, because, you know, back when I was starting, especially when I was studying a lot of classical guitar, I really paid attention of a lot of things, economy of motion, proper right hand and left hand technique and position and everything. But that's what, you know, what every other player needs to do, especially like if you play piano or keyboards, if you play mandolin and other instruments, you need to work on technique in order to play the repertoire. But we tend to separate these things, like playing guitar sometimes is like if you want to play with feel, it needs to be without technique. If you want to play without feel, you need to play with technique. But actually, there's not this separation with other instruments. You need to just play your instrument as better as you can. That's why we study technique, in order to get our ideas flowing in the best way possible. I like it. I don't really like enfant prodige, because I'm 27 years old. I'm a grown man, you know. I'm not a kid anymore. So, there are still some people that call me enfant prodige, but yeah. Maybe virtuoso it's a thing, but I mean, there are so many other virtuosos out there. I'm for sure I'm not the only one. So yeah, especially on the guitar.
Yeah. That's great, and I think it's funny how you're saying that you like the technical aspect of it without differentiating the feeling, right? Because the guys that we say are feeling guitarists, guitarists that has feel, like David Gilmour, B.B. King, those guys also use techniques like bends and vibratos and slides, and they're also techniques, right? They're not the fast techniques, but they're also techniques nevertheless.
Yeah, but also when you hear a lot of notes, like for example Bach, nobody says to Bach, yes, only technique.
Or Vivaldi, yeah, right? Those guys that also play really fast songs.
Yeah, Paganini. If you hear a piece like by Liszt or Debussy, for example, you need to have technique in order to get on that level of expression, because technique is not only mechanical playing, it's also expression, it's also being able to produce a note with a good quality of sound. That's also technique for me, and not only fast things, you know. People tend to confuse these things, and when you think about technique, you only think about fast playing, but technique is not only that. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well-tuned bend will also be a kind of technique, right? Fast or slow vibrato will also be a kind of technique. And with that being said, you having started on the acoustic guitar, were those was that the basis of all your studying? Because not only do you play it with the whole finger kind of thing instead of the pick, but I feel like there would have also been a great challenge and difficulty along the way of transferring the knowledge you had from the acoustic guitar to the electric because of the string tension, the materials different, the scale size, and all those things.
Well, I actually started with the electric, and I then started to study classical guitar when I was about 14. But I actually started with the electric guitar when I was around 10 years old, and I don't know why. For me, it was just a natural way to do that, like playing with fingers. And I started with fingers. I said in many interviews, I started with fingers because I saw always my father playing classical guitar when he was at home, and he was playing with fingers. And I just thought that every guitar was meant to be played with fingers, you know? I didn't know that you should use a pick with the electric and fingers with classical. I didn't know about this difference. So that's why I started with the electric guitar. I started with, you know, a lot of rock bands like Led Zeppelin, AC/DC were a big thing when I was a kid. Jimi Hendrix, of course, was kind of my big influence at the start. And then, you know, the first thing I noticed that was hard with fingers was producing the right sound, actually. Because back when I started, I didn't know about nails. So I was only using my flesh in order to play the string, and the sound was too dark, was too muddy, you know. So I started to experiment with nails once I started studying classical guitar. So I came to know the world of nails, and it's a really complicated thing because when you play with the pick, for example. If you broke the pick, you just change it, you know? You just take another one and
That's
continue to play.
true. That's true.
If you break a nail, it's not really like that. It's not that comfortable. So because of that, I like to keep my nails really short. Here's my nail here and here.
Just a
So
little
they
bit
are,
over the flesh, right?
yeah, a little bit over the flesh. So I have the attack that is similar to the pick, but at the same time you have a more mid-range sound with fingers. It's a darker sound rather than the pick. The attack is really different, but when you have nails, you have a little more attack, and I think you need to have nails in order to play electric guitar with fingers. I tried without nails, but the sound is too muddy. It's not really. I just don't like it, so.
There's not as much definition because the nails will give that small spike on each note that will
Yeah,
make the that will
that's
make
right.
your ear easily differentiate the notes, right? And funny you say that because since you had the influence of your father on the acoustic and you start also started playing very young, I could have sworn that you started playing acoustic guitar because I was like, oh, that makes sense. His father influenced him to play music, and then because his father is an acoustic guitar player, then he also started an acoustic. So since you just told me that you actually started on the electric and then you went a little bit to the acoustic, was it like a little bit electric through the week, and then sometimes on the day you would also play a little bit of acoustic? Or did you actually have the phase of the acoustic guitar where you prioritize the acoustic, or like how do those acoustic and electric guitar phases go in your life?
Well, back when I started was mostly electric. So from 10 to 13 years old, let's say the first 3 years of playing was mostly electric guitar. When I started high school, classical guitar, I started studying classical guitar simply because there wasn't electric guitar to study on the high school. So you only had one choice. And I chose classical guitar, and I didn't really like the classical repertoire back then. I was more attracted to the electric sound, you know, and repertoire and all the rock bands. I was really a rock guy, basically. So that's why I didn't really study the classical guitar with, with joy like the electric. I was more like forced to do that, but in the end, it gave me a lot of new stuff to play. I perfectioned my technique thanks to the classical guitar studies. So, one thing that I didn't like about classical guitar was also that you always play alone.
Oh
You
yeah.
don't play with other people, especially the classical guitar repertoire. And I wasn't really a fan of that because one of the funniest things about music for me is the interaction between other people. Like playing with a rhythm section is one of my favorite things to do. So that's why classical guitar for me wasn't that attractive to me. And
Yeah.
also the repertoire, I mean, was good. You work a lot on your technique, you work a lot on your left hand strength because you have to do a lot of chords with classical. But yeah, it was a phase that helped me a lot. But mostly, I played a lot of electric guitar during my life. Most of the time was the electric guitar.
I see. And you said it did help you get some techniques right. What was it that had the classical repertoire giving you a nice base on the technique? Was it like some specific exercises, or like do you remember what kind of things helped you get better at the acoustic guitar? Then later on you could transfer it to the electric?
Well, one of the most important things was producing a good sound from the start. I think with the classical guitar, you need to have a good sound on your own. The
Yeah.
guitar will not
No
help you.
effects, no amps, right?
No,
No,
no
nothing like
effects,
that.
no pedal boards, no amps. And the electric player tend to think too much about gear, we tend to think too much. If I don't like the sound, that means that I have to modify something on the pedal board, or I have to change amp. But most of the time, you can pretty much adjust your sound by playing in a different way or study more the production of the sound.
Yes.
So that's what classical guitar helped me a lot achieve that. So even the to keep your why I keep my nails short, because they are more comfortable, first of all, but also because of the sound. Because if you have longer nails, you have a different sound.
Yeah.
And
Your sound, from what you told us, is a mixture of nail and flesh, right? To have the attack of the nail and the body of the flesh.
and also the way you shape the nail, it can produce a different sound. So that's what I learned with classical guitar, and it helped me a lot to produce a better sound from the start without touching anything from pedal board to different guitars. That's why tone is in the hands. It sounds like a banal thing, but really tone is in the hands. So and another thing was also left hand strength. Because we electric guitar players, we tend to solo a lot. We don't do a lot of
Yes.
chords. No, we solo a lot. We concentrated a lot on soloing, but
True.
actually, classical guitar has a lot of polyphonic things. So you have to do a lot of chords. You have to do a lot of arpeggios, and that kind of workout helped me a lot to achieve left hand strength. So yeah, these two things were the most helpful.
That is so great. And on your fingers only playing style, what would you say is harder playing only with fingers, and what would you say is easier?
Well, it's easier for sure to skip strings and playing different arpeggios. Like I always say that the advantage you have with fingers is that you are able to play the chord shape. Sometimes when we have like different chord shapes, and if you want to play them with the pick, it's almost like one note per string,
Yeah.
and you can sweep pick, but you don't have the same control if you have like four different strings and every finger on the string, you know.
Yeah.
You have much more control with that because you can choose whatever order you want. You can start with whatever string you want.
Yes,
So
yes.
fingers are better if you want to play on different strings, but it is a little bit harder to play on the same string. So for example, if I have to alternate on the same string and I have to do this kind of movement or three sometimes, I use ring, medium, and index most of the time. I had to work a lot on that. And with the pick is a little bit easier. You have a little bit more control over the same string.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the rule for me, is that the pick is easier if you want to play on the same string. Take for example all the like Malmsteen, Paul Gilbert kind of runs, like 3 note per string, shred 80s kind of stuff. That kind of thing is way easier, I think, with the pick rather than fingers. You can achieve it with fingers, but it's harder, I
It's
think.
much harder, right?
Yeah.
And I thought it was so funny how you said that your whole virtuosic, your whole playing fast kind of thing kind of happened naturally while you were learning the instrument. Because a lot of people try to consciously achieve the playing fast and play clean kind of thing, and they have a really hard time with it. So looking back at it, can you observe what were the things that made you get good at playing fast and clean? Like, what kind of was it a kind of mentality? Was it a kind of exercise? Was it having, for example, your father helping you along the way? Or what were the things that made you play so fluently like you play today?
Well, I think because I pretty much took a lot of attention on staying relaxed while I play. And I wanted to play, let's say, complicated things. I remember that one of the first players that kind of introduced me to the virtuoso playing was Eric Johnson. And I wanted to play some of his lines, and they were pretty fast.
Yep.
But actually, my goal was not to play faster than him. I just wanted to play clean, like Eric Johnson plays. So my goal was to play the thing as best as I can while staying relaxed. So this was a really key. That was a really important thing for me. Another thing was also playing slow, especially when I was starting playing. The first hour of playing is always slow movements, especially my practice routine right now. I always pay attention to practicing slow and then get to the speed. But
Yeah.
it needs to happen with time, because when you practice slow, you hear a lot of details that you can't really hear when you play fast.
Yeah.
So in order to get these details at 100%, you need to play really slow at the start. And that's what I was doing basically from the start.
Yeah.
And of course, the more I was playing, the more I got, consistent with that. But I think, yeah, the main two guys that kind of introduced me to the shred playing, let's say, were Eddie Van Halen, first of all, and Eric Johnson. These two were, yeah, still one of my favorite players, yeah.
Yes, great, great names. And when you say slow, you mean like you can play even faster than you could if you just warmed up a little bit and then ramped up the speed, but you consciously tell yourself, I'm gonna start playing like really slow, even though I can play faster, just to get all those small details right. Is that it?
Yeah, but in reality, if you can play fast, that doesn't mean that you can play it slow, because sometimes when you play slow requires a little bit more control, especially when you're playing legato stuff.
Yeah.
When you're playing slow, sometimes it is harder to do that rather than just shredding without tempo. Sometimes it's harder to do like to do a phrase with a slower tempo, but on time, rather than do it fast. So that's why I'm always trying to study on different tempos, because people always think that faster means harder, but actually it isn't. Sometimes there are things that are actually harder at a slower tempo rather than a faster tempo. Yeah.
Yeah. And because you said a little bit about Van Halen and Eric Johnson, I'd like to know your guitar influences and your guitar phases throughout your life. Were you a guy, because you said it also a little bit, Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, were you a guy that stuck to listening to the same things? Like, would you still listen to AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, those guys? Or are you a guy that is always seeking new influences? The Italian guitarists, do you have a close eye on them as well? Who are your influences?
Well, at the start were mostly guitar players, of course, and my first big influences, as I said, that there were pretty much a lot of rock bands, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, AC/DC, Jimi Hendrix. So these guys were the first ones, and then I kind of got back in time, and I started to listening more jazz players. People like Wes Montgomery, for example, or Django Reinhardt are a big influence for me. Barney Kessel, also Joe Pass, this kind
Yes.
of guys. I was interested in that kind of music for a while. And of course, all the bebop players like Charlie Parker, Sonny Stitt, a lot of saxophone players, Cannonball Adderley, even the modern ones like Michael Brecker, Chris Potter. And I got interested into a lot of jazz. I went into a phase where I got really interested into jazz, and I was listening a lot of players that were playing with distortion sound, but actually the vocabulary was very jazz oriented. So that
Yes.
became kind of my let's say mentality. Like I
Yeah.
wanted to, playing a lot of interesting phrases like jazz vocabulary and all this stuff, but at the same time I wanted to rock. And so I started to listen to people like Scott Henderson, Alan Ellsworth, and Frank Gambale, Wayne Krantz, big fan of
Yes.
him, this kind of guys. So Mike Stern also a lot, John Scofield, and a lot of that. These players that they were kind of between the rock and jazz, and today it's called fusion, but actually fusion is the meaning is so vast that
Yeah,
you
fusion
can
could be any kind of fusion, right? That's the
it
thing.
can be any kind of fusion. If you think about it, Led Zeppelin was kind of fusion, it was
True.
like folk music with rock and with blues and all of that stuff. So, but fusion, it means it is usually referred as electric jazz. So fusion for me is like Weather Report, a Mahavishnu Orchestra, Chicory Electric Band, or Return to Forever, this kind of stuff. At least for me, and this is kind of more like jazz fusion, let's say. But back in the days, it was called electric jazz because the upright bass
Yes.
was substituted by the electric bass. So everyone was electric back then. Yeah, and yeah. So I kind of got interested in this stuff, and then, right now I try to listen to stuff where the guitar is not the main protagonist. We guitar players tend to have this tendency to listen too much our colleagues. We listen too much to other guitar players,
Yeah.
and that's right. I mean, I'm passionate about guitar, but I consider myself a musician first and then a guitar player second. So
Yeah.
we are interested in music, actually, not just guitar. So that's why I try to listen to music where the guitar is not always. Sometimes I listen to music where the guitar is just not there,
Yeah, there's no
like Yellow
guitar.
Jackets, for example, or Weather Report are a perfect example. They are one of my favorite bands, but there's no guitar player there. And Yellow Jackets is another example. Jacob Collier is a perfect example of an artist that interests me a lot. He's one of my favorite artists right now. And you know, the guitar is not for sure the main protagonist in
Yeah.
Jacob's music. Yeah, I try to listen to everything so I can have like more creativity with the guitar. If you only listen to guitar players, so you will think about music in a too guitaristic way, let's say. So that's why it's important to listen a lot of music.
Yeah. And it's so awesome that many of those names you said, like Chick Corea and all those fusion guys, you play their songs with snips, you do rearrangements. And so it's clearly an influence on you and the guys. But what catches me the most attention is to think what makes you guys inspired to do a rearrangement of a song. How do you guys look at a specific song? Oh, we're gonna do Spain. How are we gonna change Spain to make it our own? And they're so under they're on.
Well, most of it was basically we were really interested in harmony. And back at the time when I was with Snips, there were a lot of reharmonization of songs that were really popular on the internet. And a perfect example were Dirty Loops, for
Yes.
example.
Yes.
The trio from I think they are from Sweden, right?
I think so.
But yeah, and it was a really popular style. It is still now, but back in like 2016, 2017, it was really blowing up. So we were kind of interested on that thing, like rearranging popular songs, but with a lot of interesting chords progressions. Sometimes not really beautiful chord progressions, but at least really uncommon. So we were trying something you know that wasn't really you know common to do. So reharmonizing jazz standard in a strange way. We started with this idea actually, and we started with the chicken. And I remember that I had this tendency to play a lot of sus chords when I didn't know what to do. So that was my kind of process. Okay, let's put some sus chords here and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's what the chicken basically, the arrangement was born like that, basically.
Yeah.
That was fun for us. I mean, it was also a method to study new things, you know? Like studying the songs and then modifying it with your friends. It was just fun, you know, and
Yeah. And it's a great way to challenge yourself, right? If you don't feel like playing a standard that has been played a million times the same way, the second you say, I'm gonna change it a little bit, then everybody's interested to see, oh, what is he gonna do with that thing that everyone has heard before, right? But what were the kind of
yeah.
feedbacks you got from people that caught your attention in that sense?
Well, I mean, first of all, it wasn't a thing that we invented. I mean, there are a lot of people that are rearranging standards, and they are especially reharmonizing standards in an incredible way. But the thing for us is that I first of all wanted to do some trio videos, some live in studio videos, because I wanted to show people that I wasn't just a bedroom guitar player, you know. I
Oh,
wasn't
okay.
playing in my room. I was also playing with other people, and I was playing around Italy at the time, not around the world. I wasn't really famous back then. But you know, I wanted to do something that involved more musicians rather than just me playing with backing tracks, because it became boring after a while. So that's why Snips was born. And I think the thing that people really liked about this kind of videos is that you can see the joy of us playing together. And sometimes we messed up on the videos. There are some mistakes, there are some errors, but we are always with a smile, you know, and people really like that. When you're playing and you have fun with friends, people tend to resonate with that. So that's why this kind of videos always works better rather than just me improvising on backing tracks or doing a cover, you know?
Yeah. And you were saying that you wanted to prove you didn't want to be a bedroom guitarist. I want to ask you, what was the impact of YouTube and internet in your life as a whole? Because out of curiosity, I imagine what kind of guy you would be if you came 20 years before you did, and then there was no internet. Well, by the time you became a musician, by the time you learned your instrument and exposed yourself to the world. So what, how has YouTube shaped your career? And how would it have been different if there was no YouTube and internet?
Well, for sure it would have been different without YouTube, because YouTube helped me a lot to achieve a lot of informations from the start. So that's what I think that's what the internet was made for, in order to, you know, absorb a lot of things. I was able to listen to a lot of things.
What
So
kind of
YouTube.
information, by the way, do you remember? Was it like advices from other guitarists? What kind of things?
Well, I came to know a lot of the theory I know now thanks to YouTube, actually. So I discovered the like modal interchange or modes,
Yes.
or you know, the secondary dominance, all this kind of stuff. I discovered them through YouTube. So all my theory knowledge was also because of the conservatory, but even before the conservatory, I came to know these things thanks to YouTube. And I also, you know, learned a lot of things thanks to YouTube, because I can slow down the videos and I can hear better what's happening maybe on a live session or on a recording. So, you know, it was such a powerful tool. And I immediately realized that because I knew a lot of things when I was like 20 years old. And my father said to me that when he was 20, he barely knew like the half diminished chord, you know? He really didn't know a lot of things, because back then you really need to go live to see people. Now you can go on YouTube or on their website or on their Instagram page and you hear a lot of things. We are much more exposed to music. So that's why it's simple to achieve information now. But on the other hand, I mean, without YouTube, it would be much different, of course. But the thing is that I think a negative thing is the attention span we have now, because we have so many inputs, so many new music to listen, that sometimes you can easily like burn out of new things. Back then was like, okay, I bought these three albums and I will listen them for the next 3 years. So you have a, without internet, I think back when they were only vinyls and CDs and you have to buy them to listen them, I think there was maybe a stronger connection, because you can listen only just a few music, but you are more connected to it. Right now we listen too much music and we are not really connected to any of what we listen. I think to counterpart that is that I think it's better to listen like less music, but in a more deep way. So that's why I'm really a fan of not listening just one song from an album, but listening the whole album in the exact order, because an album is an experience from start to bottom, you know? So you need to go through all of that in order to being able to speak about an album, you know. And most of the people right now, they listen just one or two songs and okay, this album is incredible or this album sucks, you know, but you are not listening with attention anymore, because it's harder right now. So
And also, in that sense that people aren't having much of an experience, how do you feel you will mold your guitar playing and your compositions? Like, for example, you had The Journey as your first big release, right? To say to people, okay, this is how I'm gonna sound. in a very different ways throughout my life. This is how I sounded, and this is what I want to show, that I have all this influence. That why it has so many different songs with so many different takes on it. And then going forward, and also comparing to the journey itself, how would you say Matteo Mancuso will position himself in terms of offering his music to the world?
Well, first of all, the goal with the journey was to create an album that wasn't associated with just one style. So that's why it's so diverse. There's the rock song, there is Drop D, for example. There are more other fusion songs, let's say, like Falcon Flight or Samba Party. And there are jazz-inspired songs like Blues for John is the most jazziest one, Polyphemo also. So I wanted to create something, you know, like me, because I don't want to play just one style forever, you know. I don't like to put music on different boxes, you know. There's rock, there's jazz, there's funky, there's country, you know. I like to mix everything, because for me there's just good music and bad music, music that I like and music that I don't like. That's it. And that's how I view also my lead playing as well. I don't like to play like in style, you know. I like to fuse things. I like to play clean where I feel that I want to play clean, but I play also in distortion where I feel that's better. It really depends on the context, actually. So because of that, I would like to, you know, produce albums that are not associated with just one style, you know. And also, in order to achieve your kind of style, you need to listen to a lot of things, because otherwise you will miss a lot of opportunities. If you want to, you know, let's say that you want to create pop songs, and because of that you only listen to pop stuff, you will eventually make pop songs, but they will be a byproduct of your already listened pop songs, and they will not be something fresh.
Yeah.
So in order to create something fresh, you need to mix up an element that is not really associated with pop. So maybe you are listening to pop songs and you are also passionate about you know, country music, or maybe you listen a lot of Indian music, or a lot of tabla players, a lot of, you know, South Brazilian influences. I think that's how a lot of the music I like is born. And a perfect example is Pat Metheny. And yeah. Pat Metheny is really jazz oriented, but there is a lot of world music there, South American music, Brazilian kind of stuff. Especially in the rhythm section, there's so much going on, and I like music that is not associated with just one style. That's our, and Pat Metheny is the perfect example of that. In order to be a good composer, I think you need to be a good listener first. So that's why you need to mix a lot of things, even things that you think that they're not really got
connected.
Well together.
Yeah.
Connect together. Yeah. Yeah.
If you like them, it's enough, right? You don't have to think they sound similar. You just have to like both of them and then bring that to yourself. Because in that point, I'd like to add that I feel like most of the people that we admire, even if it's like long after their passing, so like Miles Davis, or you said, for example, Pat Metheny, and then we have Michael Jackson, like all these, or David Bowie, we have all these guys that are from some such different like areas of music and lifestyles of the world. One of the greatest reasons why we admire them is, I think, from one of the things that you achieve in your playing, in your style, is to not have a specific style where you could just point your finger and say, oh, if it's a funk guitar with distortion, with that and with that, whatever, then it's Matteo Mancuso. I feel like that's the thing you kind of are going a little bit away from, right? And because you also said Brazil, I remember that you have a song called Samba Party, right?
Yeah.
And we have a great part of our audience are Brazilians. What is your association with Brazil? Because we're very curious, for sure.
Well, there's not really a musical association with that song. There's nothing Brazilian in it,
That's what I thought
actually.
when I was hearing. I was there like, wait, is he trying to describe samba through his ears? I don't really hear the samba, but yeah, cool.
It was just a fun name to me, so it was kind of an inside joke between the musician I play with, and then it started like that. And there's the actual theme of the song. When I started the demo production, I founded a loop logic that was kind of Brazilian-like, let's say. But
A
actually, when
logic? What do you mean?
I'm sorry, there was I used Logic Pro as my.
Oh, okay. I thought you mean there was a logic behind it, not the program logic. I see what you
So I use a drum loop in Logic.
Yeah.
It was kind of a Brazilian rhythm stuff. I don't remember the name, but there was like samba Brazilian in it.
Yeah.
And the demo was actually with this kind of loop. And it was more on that direction. But when I eventually play that with Gianluca Riccardo, the
Yeah.
drummer and the bass player, we kind of got on another direction, and I
Yeah.
like that more because it was more unique, you know. And so, but it stayed samba party because it actually started as a, let's say, samba tune. But yeah, I just left the name because it was fun. It doesn't have anything to do with samba, but that's because it's fun, yeah, because of it.
Okay. So we're definitely gonna have many people in the comment section saying, "Come to Brazil." And I think that should be that should wrap that should be about it. That should wrap the interview. Well, if you have any final messages to say, or if you want to leave your socials where people can find you, or any kind of project that you have in the making that you would like to announce to our audience, please feel free to do whatever you want.
Well, I'm currently working on a new album, and it's not a second solo album, but it's another album by Drift Lab. It's another project I have going on, and it's a quartet with Manuela Montesanti, Federico Malaman, Daniele Chiantese, the drummer. We have a lot of interesting stuff going on, and we have the first gigs actually on April. So this is a project I'm really excited about it. I'm also, trying to compose my own songs when I have time. And yeah, I'm actually right now practicing like a madman,
Oh yeah, that's what was something. Okay, last question then. This is officially the last question. Do you still practice guitar? Do you still have a practice session? After you have so many projects going on, do you still have time to practice?
Yeah, luckily, yes. I force myself to find time to practice. That's the right answer, I think, because back when I was younger, I had so much more time because I didn't have all these commitments and things and emails to answer
Yeah.
and interviews also.
I'm
But
sorry, I'm taking your time away from practicing.
I kind of learned how to have balance between busy days and free days. So I try to practice 4 hours a day. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But I try to play guitar every day. That's the most important thing for me. Also because it became also a job, and before it wasn't. So back when this was a job, I was able to, I don't feel like I want to play, and I didn't play. But right now I cannot do this anymore. I
Yeah,
have to
now it
play.
can't be really a choice, right? And I would guess the things you would practice would be the compositions and the repertoire you have to play live and things like that, right?
Things like that, even new things, I really like to, I don't have a really scheduled practice routine. Like I play arpeggios for an hour and then scales for another hour. It's not really like that. I don't have the patience to do that. I'm more like grab the guitar and play what excites me the most in that moment. So yeah.
Yeah. So, Matteo, I thank you very much for having such a great conversation for this hour or so. And people are gonna be able to check you out through your socials. I'll leave all the links below. You guys can also check me out on my Instagram mainly, Vilela Volume 11. I'll leave the link. Subscribe to the channel. Thank you very much for this time, and I'll see you guys in the next episode of Volume 11. Bye bye.
Oh.